You're listening to 90.3 Near FM. It's Northside Today. Johnny Holmes here, and that was Theme to the Late Late Show. And speaking of which, on a sad note, three legendary TV and radio personalities passed away recently, all within a short space of time. Marion Finucane was last Thursday on the 2nd of January, Larry Gogan just 2 days ago on the 7th, and Gay Bourne on 4th of November. And I'm now joined here in the studio with Vice Chairman of Near FM. He's Declan Cahill, and he's going to be talking about their contribution to the people of Ireland over the last six decades. Good afternoon, Declan, and thanks very much for coming into us today.
Good afternoon, Johnny. Great to be here again.
That's great. Declan, we must first talk about Marion first, you know, because as they say, ladies before gents. And I have to say the news of her passing away was a complete shock to the nation, wasn't it?
It was. In fact, I think most people were quite stunned by the nature of it, because it was so sudden, it was so ordinary, it wasn't an accident, you know, that the poor lady apparently wasn't feeling well, went back to bed and drifted away. And apparently what normally would happen is that on the Thursday she would get a text from the producer of her weekend show just to check everything was okay, that she got all the briefs and so on. And most unusually, she didn't get a reply, apparently. And later on, they text again, and it was her husband who answered and said, look, I have bad news here. So the other ironic thing that's coming out is that at her funeral, her husband said that she had spoken with him just before Christmas about the fact that she was going to retire this year. So you never know. I suppose really the message coming out from me is that you simply do not know what's around the corner, and no matter who you are, and the best laid plans, etc., etc. So to all listeners, I would always advocate, you know, seize the day, carpe diem, and enjoy it, and knock some enjoyment out of it and fulfilment. And don't be planning too much about what you're going to do. I had another very sad, another couple I know who were planning all these things they're going to do in their retirement. And they had 3 years to go, and they were going to do this, and they were saving, etc., etc. And the poor chap's wife contracted a very serious illness and died very quickly. And the poor man is bereft because so many plans were in the future. Now, I know we have to plan. And you have to, you know, from a radio point of view, you have to plan a production and so on. But there's a lot to be said for enjoying the moment.
Yes, yeah, the present is all we have.
Exactly.
Really.
Exactly.
The past is gone. It belongs in history. Yeah. The future may never come.
That's the big thing I've taken out of these three people who have passed on. Getting back to Marion, I think she was an extraordinary woman. Because, number one, the time she came on the scene, you know, she's a local girl, went to Skull Katrina, and then went to Baldwin Street, studied architecture and practiced as an architect for a short while. A very feisty, tough young woman. She was highly regarded. If you hear some of her early interviews where they took over houses and, you know, fought to retain the old Georgian houses, she was so articulate. You know, she was able to get her message across so skillfully at that stage. She was hired by the Owen Harris in RTE as a continuity announcer way back in 1974.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and so quickly made her mark. She didn't suffer fools gladly. She certainly attacked and smashed the glass wall which existed in Irish society, because I would come from that era. I came to Dublin in 71, so I mean, it was very much... women had their place in society, and, you know, get back into your box, woman, type of thing. You know, it was really very, very strong. Young people today are not aware of that, I don't think, to the same extent. They might think it's bad now, you know, but certainly women's role in broadcasting was suspect by many of the higher echelons.
Well, in fact, their salary wasn't the same as males.
Absolutely. I mean,
for
I
quite
remember
a while, yeah.
When I worked, I've come from a technical background, and I remember at one stage there was a big battle in a trade union about whether female technical people should be paid the same as male technical people with the same qualifications. In fact, some cases greater qualifications and more skilled, and yet they were treated differently. So that's the context we're talking about here. So when she took on the system, apparently, and I remember her on some of her programmes, she was tough. She was very, very fair now. She was very, very fair. And she wasn't strident. That was the other thing. I mean, some people from those days were strident, and they were easily put in a corner because of that. Marion marshalled all her facts and all her information and made the case and really pushed home. I'll tell you a very funny story of the impact, a personal thing. I was away and visiting a company up the country or whatever, coming back, and I was listening to Liveline, her afternoon programme. And she was talking about, this woman rang in to say that, you know, her husband wasn't helping with the homework, with the housework. And I was sort of driving along and I said, Janie, Max, I said, I think I'd fall into this category. So I went home and got out to Hoover and Hoover the house. So I expected a round of applause or whatever. At the end, my wife looked at me and she said, yeah, well, I won't say what she said, but she suggested my sanity was questionable and said, you didn't even notice that I'd hoovered myself today. The impact she had on a lot of men, including myself, changing, tweaking, modifying our view, educating us. You know, my father used to always say, you know, just because you're qualified doesn't mean to say you're educated. And it's very true. So Marion really, I think in 1979, after a relatively short period, she won a Jacobs Award for her programming, which was unusual at the time for a woman to have got such a high accolade because it was a judgment by peers and so on. She went on then to do the afternoon Liveline, as I said, and that was a hugely successful programme, tackling issues which aimed at women primarily, but also there was a broader context, I think, she had in mind, not only for women, but changing the backdrop against which women operated and behaved. She, you know, that I thought that was groundbreaking, and it did change and it irritated and annoyed the establishment to a huge extent, and she was quite happy with that, you know, because she regarded that was her role to take on things in a nice way. She always reminded me of a cobra because she would interview somebody and she would be all sort of, you know, right, and listen, the person would rabbit on, and then she would strike with the question and nail you, and if you didn't have your homework done, you were in trouble, because she would go after you, you know, very, very, very.
That's like, were you a regular listener to our programmes?
When I could, I couldn't because I was working, but any time I was, travelling, say, in the car or whatever, I would listen in. And I always found her way of operating. I grew up with radio. That's my generation. Television, we never had a television until I was 18, you know, so I was radio, you know. Yeah.
Well, as for Marion, actually, thousands, you know, they always enjoyed her programmes, and she'll always be missed on radio. Publicly, the nation lost a skilled broadcaster. But time is catching up with us. We have to move on to Larry, if that's all right. And just 2 days ago, legendary broadcaster Larry Gogan passed away, aged 85, who worked with RTE for over 50 years as a presenter at 2FM for 40 years before moving to RTE Gold last year. Right. Another top-class broadcaster, I'd have to say, and a complete shock to the nation.
That's right. Now, most unusually, he started literally when he finished school. And he got in because a woman who was a producer apparently in RTE lived in Fairview where they had a family shop, and he got to know her and he got an audition and so on. So he worked originally as a presenter in Radio 1, as it was known, back in the old GPO, doing all sorts of things. Now, the two things that strike me is that, number one, his voice, you know, it was something so special about it. And number two,
they named it, he had a golden voice.
Golden voice, yeah. And the other thing about him was that it seems, you know, from the tributes and from reading about it, is that it's a very, very unusual to hear about somebody who was universally liked. Like the other people to be for and against, but everybody apparently spoke so highly about him because he was so kind. He was so generous to new people. Now, a lot of the well-established presenters didn't like these young bucks coming in. Larry had a totally different approach. He maintained that these were the future and he would help and nurture them. And Mark Cagney has had a lovely article in the paper yesterday how he, first time when he was working in the radio in Cork, and at that time, Larry would go around the country promoting what's now FM, VHF programming and so on, and he wheedled his way in and just watched the way he operated, and he was making the point that I just have a little quotation here that he said that he addressed a microphone and he spoke to the audience as if they were sitting right in front of him. And it's something that all of us involved in radio, I think we need to remember that you know, you're not talking to the ether, you're talking to someone, because someone is listening. Now, there could be many someones, but that's the point. He has had this gift, really, of connecting with people. I didn't listen to, an awful lot to FM and that program at all. I wasn't a great fan, because of my age, maybe, or whatever. But I remember him doing the Top 20. And he, in his early days, he based his style on Alan Freeman from the BBC and Luxembourg and so on, and that mid-Atlantic type of approach. But it was, you know, the countdown, you remember, you'd be, who's number one this week, you know, and he just presented it so well. In terms of presenting, an awful lot of the early days was all live, there was no recording. So everything had to be, you know, well, and of course, the old rule of thumb, rehearse, deliver on the spot. And it was fascinating to hear some of the stories about the old studios where, you know, nowadays with all the fancy stuff, it was very basic, you know. So somebody had to be shoved out of the way to get into a mic to do the ads or whatever, the promos or so on, you know.
And twin vinyl players. That's what they had.
You know, yes, it's amazing. So the other thing about them is that, again, people... I suppose Larry Gogan has been such a backdrop to Irish radio that, for example, in Eurovision, he was the voice on the radio from 1984 to 2001, and also in 2008, and he was part of the delegation in 2011. So right up to the end, he was very involved in that. I think he was messed around personally in terms of scheduling. You know, he was always being moved around, I think, to fill gaps that needed to be shored up, because, you know, they knew he would deliver. And I think he was very patient, you know, to put up with that. A lot of presenters wouldn't do that. I mean, he was a late night, you know, morning, afternoon, so on. He just got in and got stuck in and did the job. Preparing, you know, he it's a lesson for all of us, you know, that he never went in cold. He had everything lined up and his programme was structured and the music was always in a nice order, and you take it for granted because it was so good. It's like everything else, like good organisation, they say, is never seen. Good presentation and the planning of it is rarely seen. Or heard, I suppose, but the people who are good at it and the people like ourselves involved in radio really appreciate a slick, not a slick, but a well presented, produced show. By the way, just a little bit of information, that his favourite album was Catty Died by Steely Dan, and the one song that he absolutely despised was Show Your Love for Renee Renata. He despised it. And one little aside, when Joe Dolan brought out his record, I Fell in Love with a Girl in the Whitewash Gable, Larry was horrified and said, look, this will not be a hit. That was the one mistake he made, because it was a huge hit. So just goes to show the taste of people, it varies so much.
Absolutely, yeah. I believe a book of condolences is available now in RT Radio Centre for people to sign.
Yeah, that's nice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Are you aware of his funeral details?
Not yet, no, I haven't heard it.
Okay,
no.
I think the removal is later this evening at the Church of St Pius in Temple Oak, arriving at 5:30.
Okay.
And the funeral mass is tomorrow morning at 11:30 in the same church, of course.
Same church, yeah.
But there will be a private burial afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. And the other thing, of course, about Larry Gogan is that he was such a family person. And again, I think you can see people who are rooted in a stable family are people who are better rounded, perhaps, and don't have the problems that people have from other situations. You know, he'd... children and grandchildren, like, he absolutely adored his wife, who died unfortunately back in 2002, I think it was, and the poor man was shattered, you know, because he's so, you know, his whole life revolved around his lovely Flory, and it was tough, you know, on him.
Absolutely. You know, I still remember today, going back to when I was six, coming home from primary infants, and I still remember I'd be rushing home to catch his programme.
Well, go away.
Seriously, it was between 2 and 2:30.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
I caught the last 10 or 15
yeah.
minutes of it, maybe more, maybe a little bit more, and I used to be dancing in the sitting room. My mother would be laughing at me.
But is that really sort of illustrates the point, that how he impacted upon individuals of all different ages. I think people loved him, you know, they genuinely had a grow for the man, And it transcends, you know, social barriers or interests or whatever. His other great quotation was, he was asked, you know, what's the secret? He says, play the hits. You know, his attitude was, look, if it's a hit, people have put it there, so play it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. OK, and finally, before we run out of time, on the 4th of November, Ireland's number one the TV and radio broadcaster, Gay Byrne, he passed away aged 85, and another complete shock to the nation. In 2010, the Irish Times described Byrne as unquestionably the most influential radio and TV man in the history of the Irish state. Would you agree with that, and would you like to elaborate on it
a bit? I would, but very interesting. Ryan Turberty, who looked up to Gay was his mentor, Gay used to always say to him, remember this, there are people out there who will love you and people out there who will hate you, and you have to accept that. And there was a poll done at some stage where he had the same number of votes for the most hated person and the most loved person. So, you know, he was fully aware of this. Yes, but Gay, I guess I grew up with Gay Byrne. Gay Byrne was the touchstone that I would remember in terms of radio. I loved him on radio. I absolutely thought he was brilliant at radio. Television, he used to annoy me. He was annoying me, and I think it was done deliberately, maybe. But his radio, earlier radio programs, remember now, this is at a time where there were a lot of strictures in society. Society was very rigid. You go back to the early 70s, people, you know, talk about the 60s and music. I mean, Ireland was a very staid, restricted place in those days. So Gay Byrne, as a presenter, had to steer a path within the structures that he was in. And there was huge influences. Remember, the government of the day regarded RTE as a mouthpiece. I mean, we forget that now. We know that they would expect that everybody would toe the line. So Gay Byrne was very clever in the way he operated, he was able to take on issues and confront them. And, you know, he had a great producer, John Cadden, in the early days. And Joe Duffy, of course, cut his teeth as his reporter. So John Cadden was hugely influential also, because, you know, he was able to stave off perhaps some of the flack that he would be getting internally, and would stand up for the bold Gay. Mind you, Gay was well able to look after himself. He was, excuse me, he was hugely influential. There's no doubt about it, in terms of radio and television, taking on topics and issues that simply were not addressed or ventilated at all. Now, he was on television, he got into terrible trouble from the system, because he took on issues, you know, mentioning condoms and all sorts of things. There was outroar, there was absolute outroar. And his attitude was that if this is happening, people are doing these things, I've entitlement to talk about it. And that was his approach. I think that, you know, he was very cute, that he wasn't glory hunting, in the sense that, okay, he was looking after his TAM ratings and so on, you know, but he would definitely work very, very hard. Now, remember, to this day, I mean, there was a team of people behind him, remember, he wasn't just one individual. Like, I mean, you look at community radio, that, you know, you don't have 12 people behind you, Johnny, to prepare your programme. Like, Ryan Turberty has a team of 12. Gay Byrne in those days had a lot of people too. But at the same time, the individuals we're talking about here were very effective in what they did. Very interesting about his father. His father was a coachman for the Earl of Meath in Wicklow. And he joined up with the British Army in the Hussars in 1913, fought in the Battle of Somme and Ypres, and was discharged in 1919, but also fought in the War of Independence. So it's interesting, that background that his father had, which I wasn't aware of at all until I did a bit of poking around. And then he got a job as a bargeman for Guinness's on the Liffey. So Gay Byrne's background was not silver spoon. It was very, very, very simple, and came from a different background. And he also, I think, had a difficulty that he didn't have what's called as a formal education that so many young people have today. I think he might have had a bit of a chip in his shoulder on that. But when he got the doctorate from Trinity, the honorary doctorate, he was so chuffed because he regarded that as a reward for his family and his parents and his siblings and so on. He was very much inspired by Eamon Andrews, who also was ploughed the furrow, so to speak, in Britain in particular. And his brother, I think it was Ray, was a pal of Eamon Andrews, and that's how they got to know each other. His very first broadcast was in 1958, on a Monday night, doing a 15-minute slot on jazz in the old GPO.
Incredible.
And to this, to that, until he died, of course, he finished up doing the Sunday Serenade and Lyric, playing jazz, and he was very, very knowledgeable. Great story. A record was played one day on Lyric on the Sunday afternoon, and the person who was helping him afterwards, he said that was the wrong track, because he knew that the guy playing trombone was not the person that he called out. He said, no, that, well, I can't remember the name now, but, you know, he really had a deep knowledge of jazz. And by the way, he was a qualified private pilot. I didn't know that myself, no, but they are.
Never knew that.
Yeah. No, he'd often speak about flying, and he was quite knowledgeable. But actually, I realised that he was actually a qualified pilot. Some of the interviews that stick in my mind are the Patrick Flynn interview and the Late Late, and the one with Danny Murphy. I felt that she should have slapped him at the end of that interview, because what he said to her. I suppose Gay was very, I think he was very conservative in his own way, I think. He's private, but it didn't quite come out perhaps in all cases. You know, he would hide that, he would take on the issue, but I think he was quite conservative. And he was a very quiet sort of guy. You know, I mean, the other thing about it, that he lost his savings twice, I understand.
That's right, he did.
He was wiped out, you know.
Yes,
so
he did.
And the other thing, I was fascinated to learn that for many, many years, he was on a three-month rolling contract from RTE. I couldn't believe this, that because they were so frightened of him because what he was going to do. I don't think he was hugely paid, you know, throughout his career by RTE. That's the impression I get.
Not really in the early days.
In the early days, yeah. No. We think that he's, you know, it was very, you know, he was a grafter. He worked bloody hard, you know. And when he lost his money, I think that's why he had to go back doing various things, and he used to be seen a lot in public at launches and all that. I'm convinced he got an appearance fee for these things, and fair play to him, but I think he was pretty skint, you know, towards the end.
True. Yeah. Declan, wouldn't it be true to say, now, I know you didn't like him on TV, but...
Sometimes, not all.
Probably true, during the 60s, 70s and 80s, the Late Late Show on Friday night.
Oh.
It was gospel for Irish families. I'd say almost every household in the country had their TV tuned to the Late Late. Would you agree?
From the 5th of July 1962, it had an 8-week summer run. That was a filler, and then went on from there. That was a huge, it was everybody, in those days, remember now, that the amount of television available to a lot of people was limited, but it was absolute, you had to watch it. The other thing about it was this, unlike modern programmes, you never knew who was going to be on. It was never advertised. It was just a Late Late Show, and you would be sitting in, it was part of the social fabric, but you never knew. And he would never say who was on. And I think that was part of the magic.
The right thing to do as well.
Personally. I mean, when you hear these ads, and even at breaks within the show, because I think what's happening is, of course, is that conventional television viewing is changing dramatically. I mean, I saw some figures recently where 18 to 24s, the age group, do not watch conventional television. They do not know what a television schedule is. They watch it on telephones and tablets and laptops, but they watch it when they want, about downloads or whatever. So it's very, very different. I mean, a lot of people don't own televisions. No, they watch television programmes, but not on a conventional television box.
Exactly. You know? Well, Declan, there's so much more yeah. We could talk about Gay Byrne and in depth, of course, but unfortunately we're actually on the button with time, so we have to leave it at that, Declan, and thanks again for coming into us today.
Not at all.
It was great, really wonderful, always nice talking with you, and all the very best to you, and take care.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Now, that was Declan Cahill from Near FM. He's our voice chairperson. We were talking about the Irish radio and TV personalities, Marion Finucane, Gay Byrne and Larry Gogan, who recently passed away, sadly.